Really, really delighted to have Tom Loosemore and Jordan Hatch here to explain how they didn't break the web. Before I say that, I always forget to say my name. My name's Catherine, I'm chairing this session. The way it will run is Tom and Jordan have about 10 to 15 minutes each on what they're trying to say, and then we'll have a bit of a chat and some comments and questions afterwards, and we will finish at 12:30. Tom, over to you.
Thank you very much, Catherine. Of course, it wasn't the computer that was the problem, it was the driver that was the problem. My name's Tom Loosemore. I imagine some of you know what Government Digital Service in the singular is, but some of you won't. And even those of you that do, may be missing an appreciation of quite how joyful and fun it is to work inside government. I can say with pride that I'm a civil servant, and that comes with consequences. For those of you who don't know me, I'm one of those managerial bluffer types with ideas above my station. I wrote my last code about 8 years ago. Shortly afterwards, this gentleman at the front, Francis Irvin, banned me from my society's CVS repository on the basis that I know just enough to be really dangerous. So I've not written a line of code ever since. My job is to try and create the space where other people who know what they're doing, as people like you, can actually do the stuff that you know needs doing. In the case of Government Digital Service, that's trying to fix government. So the question I always ask myself is, what will my grandchildren, presuming I have them, ask me, given we're living in interesting times? And this is the question I worry about, personally. You know, we're right in the middle of a big thing. What did you do, Dad? And I worry, because sometimes I think, I'll have to say, I drove PowerPoint badly. But I actually got a better answer now, which is, I put post-its on walls. That's actually what I do. This is a group therapy session covering Martha Lane Fox's face with post-it notes, otherwise known as a retrospective. This is the Government Digital Service. And Martha's important in this story. Dame Foxy of Soho, Dame Lane Fox of Soho. She wrote a report. She'll kill me for that, don't tweet. She'll absolutely kill me for that. She wrote a report. She was asked by the government in the summer of 2010 to put recommendations forward about how to try and do this digital government thing properly. She wrote an exemplary report, mostly because it's only 4 pages long, and the clue is in the subtitle, which is Revolution, not Evolution. And her report, go and read it, it's really good. It's really brutal. 4 recommendations in plain English. Start by fixing online publishing. Then go on and do the really hard problem, which is fixing transactions digitally. Do it properly. Build it on APIs, so not only government has to offer these services, you can syndicate them properly. And in order to do this, you're going to need a new thing in the middle of government. That thing is called Government Digital Service. That thing needs to have the power and authority to represent the user at the heart of every government service. So Government Digital Service has the power to veto IT spend anywhere in government. We can actually veto appointments now in senior levels. We have the authority over the user experience. We're only 2 years old, but a long way to go. Quick overview of how we tried to fix publishing. Some of you will know this. There was something in the order of 2,000 government websites. No one's ever been able to count them definitively. That's not unusual. It took the BBC 6 months to count its websites. There's on the way to being just one. That's gov.uk. This is my favourite page on gov.uk. If any of you have employed anybody, and employees are lucky enough to get pregnant, or their partners get pregnant, working out paternity pay and dates is a nightmare. It takes about 20 pages of text to describe the actual legal rules for paternity pay. I don't think you did this today. Someone in DDS did a little calculator, and you just like go, you know, this is the date, this is how long I've been working for the company. These are only, I can't remember, there's about 5 or 6 different variables. It's quite a complicated bit of logic, actually, but for the user, it's dead simple. And the thing I like, of course, it's a nice hackable URL, doing it properly. We've also just moved 24 department sites onto gov.uk. And superficially, that's like, yeah, whatever, you've moved a bunch of content. Well, we've sort of rewritten all the content so it's plain English. We've got rid of 90% of it, because frankly, it wasn't really needed. What we've also done is break the silo of publishing only within the context of a department. Because when you take something like the government's policy on Afghanistan, there are four different departments that actually have a big input into the government's policy on Afghanistan. And if you're a user, you want to see what the government's policy on Afghanistan is. So you can now, and you can see those four departments being represented. So we've kind of gone n-dimensional in our view of government, which now means that Martin Rosenbaum, who's the BBC's Freedom of Information correspondent, can suddenly tweet one day and go, bloody hell, I can see all the government's Freedom of Information stuff just on one URL now. And there it is, all the FOI stuff, with an atom feed that sometimes works. And gov.uk, I think, is a good thing. It's still only early days, but we've done 1,000 software releases in 6 months. We've done hundreds of thousands of content edits. We're accepting pull requests all the time. And we've just won Design of the Year. We beat the Shard and the that funny Olympics thing, whatever, something in the Olympics that people liked, but it wasn't as good as our website, apparently. So if you want to go and see gov.uk, you can go to the Design Museum, pay your £9.50 and go and see a website. It's a beautiful... Right, in some ways publishing is always going to be the easier problem, right? Because transactions, you know, getting your paying your tax, getting your benefits, making sure you're legal with your licences and your car and whatnot, that's really where the pain of being a citizen in the UK, having to engage with government, really manifests itself. And for those of you who've had the joy of trying to do digital services with government, I think the polite way of describing the quality of them is patchy. That's about as polite as I get. So over the last 18 months or so, we've been quite quietly, GDS, putting a lot of energy now, and it's now our core focus, on 26 government services that we are working with departments. We can't do everything from GDS. We are working with other government departments and agencies to try and transform the quality of your digital experience when you're paying tax, when you're buying your driving vehicle tax, when you're getting your benefits, when you're trying to book a prison visit. So a lot of these services are not for people like you and I, and so how you design them very differently from the way you design things for yourself. So we call those exemplars. We've got 26 of them. Some examples would be, if any of you have been unlucky enough to have a parent or a grandparent require power of attorney, you'll know that the application process, you literally get a sack of papers through the post that you get through. You have to put your name and address, I think, 24 times on that paperwork. You get a 40% error rate. So people make mistakes when they have to fill in things 24 times. So 40% have to go back before they even get processed. Surely the internet can help fix that. So we're working with the Public Guardian. There's a man whose job title is, I am the Public Guardian. He has an office. We're working with the office of the Public Guardian to transform that whole process. And this really isn't about the web, not really about technology. It's about fundamental digital transformation, to reorganise and realign whole businesses, really, to make the most of the digital opportunity. And the fact that for many, 84% of the UK online, they expect high-quality digital services. To make those high-quality digital services work, you often have to reinvent your business. That's hard. That's not really about technology. Rural Payments Agency, they pay money to farmers, about £2 billion a year. Currently, the farmer gets literally a photocopy of their field and a crayon. And funnily enough, the accuracy isn't great, and we get fined hundreds of millions of pounds by the EU for the lack of accuracy that is in that process. 8 weeks, a couple of £100,000, some good GIS skills from a couple of brilliant developers, don't work for GDS. This is an alpha of the new Rural Payments Agency service. They kind of did it the way you do it. It's hard, but not that hard, if you know what you're doing. Currently, this costs every transaction for the Rural Payments Agency, every subsidy we pay to a farmer costs nearly £800 to process. Well, the crayons are expensive, you know? You can imagine the efficiencies we can get from this. And imagine if you're a farmer, and all farmers are online, apart from the sheep farmer, and we can help them. Send a car around to them. A Land Rover. You can transform the quality of their lives too. We're also doing motoring. Where's Dafydd? We've sent the Welsh to the Welsh. Dafydd there is currently helping transform the quality of DVLA, which is where all your vehicle tax gets paid, where all your driving licences get focused. They have more spaghetti than I've ever seen. That is going to take a lot of fixing. But again, the benefits are huge. So, quickly, Martha's third edict was do it properly. So to do it properly, you need to have some principles. And I think one of the most important things we've done in GDS, and the URL I give out most frequently, is gov.uk/design principles. How many of you have seen the design principles? If you haven't, if you get one thing from this talk, go and have a look at gov.uk/design principles. They are our Bible. They are the 10 statements by which we live. And increasingly, they're the 10 statements that we see other good, clueful people in other bits of government, be that local or central, and indeed other organisations, going, look, that's how the government does it. Why can't we build for inclusion? Why can't we iterate and then iterate again? Why can't we be open because it makes things better? They are very powerful principles, particularly if you stick to them. One thing I'd like to say to you lot is the importance of words. So, getting words so they're really simple and plain English. If you ever watch user testing, you can have the most elegant, clever service you like, a technology service you like. If people don't understand the words, you'll get nowhere. We have some of the best writers in the world working for government now. They've written a style guide. Particularly, I'll go have a read. There's a list of banned words, which is brilliant, very powerful in government. We've also said no to apps, because they're proprietary, and gone big with responsive design. HTML5, so we've literally put a fatwa on apps. I personally have to approve all of them, so I don't approve many. Again, if you're in an organisation where people are going, we need an app for that, go and have a look at our blog and read why you probably don't need an app for that, and say, even the government's worked out we don't need an app for that, surely we don't need one. Sometimes you do, but mostly you don't. We obsess about good URLs. I've had more arguments about URLs than almost anything else in government. That's the way it should be. And we really try hard not to break the web. And Jordan's going to be talking about how we do that in a minute. So while we have turned off dozens and seem to be hundreds of websites, and we have broken, or we've potentially broken hundreds of thousands of links, we've actually broken virtually none, hopefully none, because we've been really fastidious and anally retentive about redirection. Deep redirection, and Jordan will talk about that in a minute. We draw diagrams like this, with words like MongoDB on. I have had fellow civil servants genuinely accuse me of taking the piss. When I say, well, it was about Mongo. And, I actually have sympathy, you know. It is a very different world from someone who's worked for 40 years in the civil service. It's a completely different context. And you have to respect that. And it's really important to respect the fact that civil service is full of incredibly diligent, hardworking people who come from a different place than we do. There are some brilliant, brilliant people in the civil service. All our code's open source. It's on GitHub. If you see something wrong, just give us a pull request. Don't moan about it until you put a pull request in, please. I've got a friend in the States who sent me an email going, you spelled Middlesbrough wrong. 343 places across gov.uk. I have the great pleasure of going, why don't you put a pull request in? Had Mike Butcher from TechCrunch say, why are there no social media share buttons on your e-petition service? And I can send an email back going, I'm sure you can code that in. Taxpayers' money, Mike. So a load of questions as well about, it's all this open source, isn't that a bit dangerous? Isn't that brave? That's very brave, you hear a lot. Well, anyone recognise that? That's Cheltenham. That's where the speaks live. And CESG are the cyber speaks. And I have to say, one thing that really reassured me, they're really good. Really good. There's not enough of them, but they're really good. And their chief techie is a fantastic bloke called Ian Levy. If any of you know, get to hear Ian Levy speak, he's absolutely fantastic. And he was responsible for my favourite tweet, I think probably of the last couple of years. Can everyone read that? I think that's done the trick. Just make sure Twitter doesn't break its links. Take the screenshot. So, again, more seriously, we can't do all this from an office full of about 200 people in Holborn. Okay, this is about transforming government, really. It's about reinventing public services in the context of digital. And so we have to help the rest of government understand that there's a better way of developing services that's pretty fundamentally different from the way that we've been doing things for the last 20 or 30 years. You know, we've had 8 systems integrators with about 80% of the X billion pounds that government's been spending. You know, Parliament calls that an oligopoly. It's a fundamentally different approach to actually design your services properly. And so we just published a design manual which describes how you go about designing services. It'll tell you, let's have a look, how to be agile, how to do DevOps, the kind of people you need. It's got job descriptions in there. It's literally meant to be a manual for how you go about reinventing yourself as a government department, government agency, to deliver in this way with the kind of quality that we need. Again, I really recommend if any of you are going to have a look at it. We'd love some feedback on if it works or doesn't work for you. A lot of interest in that, and we'll keep putting a lot of effort into that because, as I say, we can't do everything ourselves. Finally, I thought I'd give a little bit of a tour as to what it feels like to be a manager in GDS, because it's interesting. So superficially, from a distance, it kind of looks like the civil service. There are people with computers looking hard-working. If you look a little bit closely, though, you'll see some differences. That's a Mac. That Mac costs 18% of the cost of its predecessor, which was a 10-year-old laptop that took half an hour to boot up. Okay. So it's less than a fifth the cost of the thing it replaced, which is now in a bin, hopefully somewhere. That woman is a developer. She's terrifyingly good, Frances. But actually, if you look around a bit more, it doesn't take you long to realise there appear to be inflatable palm trees in the office, and our delivery manager's wearing a Hawaiian shirt. But there are also people wearing bowler hats without irony. Genuinely, this is Mark. He doesn't do that for a joke. He wears that every day. There were fluffy toys that I'm allowed to pick this one up, okay? But I'm not allowed to pick this one up. I mustn't touch the badger. When I pick the badger up, there are people in this room, Sam, Nick, who will shout at me for picking the badger up, because that's the badger of deploy. And only those who've got the badger of deploy can deploy. So I have had genuine discussions with people about what do we do if someone steals the badger of deploy? Do we have a little glass case on the wall with a mini badger in it? More comfortingly, even though we have stags, we have the comforting sight of a grumpy developer with a beard. I'm kind of happy with that. But then there are people who go out of the office and take photos of themselves in front of street signs. I don't understand that. And I don't understand why all our cakes are black. All of our cakes are black. And then when I try and throw away cups, I get told to stop because they're art. And there's a big red button, and I'm not allowed to press it. Other people are. There are stickers that I have to censor. There's a minister who takes me aside and tells me in great detail what's wrong with the student loans website. That's new. And more seriously for a second, we're doing this because we've got a minister in Francis Maude who knows what a bad website looks like and knows what a good website looks like and knows broadly what it takes to fix it. That's not a party political statement. That's just reality, okay? I will stop there, but we couldn't do this without the backing of ministers. You can't change the civil service without the backing of ministers. And we've had Francis Maude backing. More jokingly, there were things like this, with like flashing lights and graphs and things, and I don't know what they mean, but the numbers change. And then there's really scary things like this, which says currently failing and lots of words I don't understand. And every so often, one of those things will go red and a developer will commit Harry Carey in the corner. because their codes failed a test or something. And then there's like these like weird art around the office that you find. This is some art that just appears on cards, like lying around. And I don't know what that means. But everybody seems to go, yeah. And then there's a bin that's not a bin. I'm not allowed to put things in this bin. This is the bin of done. And only stories can go in the bin of done. And I don't know what a story is. It looks like a card with words on it, but apparently they're very special, the bin of done. And then there are other cards that say, use HTTP methods as Roy intended. And then when I ask, why is Roy scribbled out and Tim put there, the person next to me says, well, Tim came and he said it was him that did it, not Roy. And then when I ask who Tim is, they look at me with pity. What's actually best about working for GDS as a manager is you get to enable things like this to happen. So I think Daffod's here. I don't think Maz is here. It's a shame. I'd like to humiliate her as well. But seriously, getting people like Maz and Daffod into Downing Street unaccompanied is a source of huge pleasure and pride. And they actually get listened to, and we are actually changing things. And we're changing things because we're really about making life for users that little bit less shit. Thank you. Jobs at GDS.
Tom, I'm just going to use my chair privilege. Just to ask you, I guess, two questions. Is one, questions for me. Style guide. Is that style guide going out to all of government non-digital stuff as well?
When you actually look at how much non-digital communications governments do in terms of how many words are actually read by people, it's pretty much all digital anyway.
Which leads to my second question. Digital divide. I mean, you said most farmers are on online, but actually rural broadband is known to be a bit rubbish. So how are we still kind of managing the expectation of the digital divide, and is that still an issue?
It's still an issue. Just to get some facts right, there are more people online in countryside than in towns. Okay, so getting your facts right is really, really important. If we were building digital services that required high-definition video, I'd worry, but we're fascistic about file size, and it'll work on 512, fine. There are about 16% of the UK that are not online. Some of those will never be online, and we're putting a lot of effort into working out how do we help those people. You know, HMRC have people in cars who go around already and help people do their tax returns if they can't get out of their house. We have relationships with people like Go On Trust. We're talking to the post office about how do we help people use digital services. But I think to use that as a reason for not trying to make the 84% of people's lives that much better is a bit of a straw man. So there is an issue, but it's not... We shouldn't mean we don't make our lives, the 84%, that much easier.
That's why I just needed that bit of information. Jordan, over to you.
Hi. So I'm Jordan. I'm a developer on gov.uk. And I'm going to go into a little bit more detail about something that Tom touched on earlier, which is about how we didn't break the web. And this is more specifically around how in October 2012, we closed DirectGov and we closed BusinessLink. And then since then, we've also been moving content from a whole host of government department websites. And we've been moving it all to one place. And that's on GovUK. But traditionally, when governments moved websites around in the past, they just stick a redirect into the homepage of the new website. And anyone who's got bookmarks or anything like that, they go to visit the website again, and it's broken. And breaking links is a bad thing. Not only do people have bookmarks, but search results in Google are already great for governments, so when we come along with gov.uk, sort of throwing all that out and starting again seems quite a bad idea. And on top of that, we have hundreds of thousands of these envelopes lying around government with URLs on the back. And we don't want those to break either. So we decided with gov.uk we were going to take a policy of having no link left behind. And so that kind of meant that the change just happened. A user who visited the motoring page on DirectGov come October 17th was automatically redirected around to the new browse driving page on gov.uk. And we decided to take two approaches. We had for content where there was an obvious new URL on gov.uk, we would going to redirect the user straight to the new piece of content. But on the other hand, where the content didn't really fit the criteria to be a user need on Gov.uk, we'd show the user a gone page. For example, we thought that this piece of content right here didn't quite meet the criteria to be a user need on Gov.uk. And so if you visit that page now, you get a message saying this page is no longer here, and a link so you can see it on the National Archives website. And so to do that, we needed a redirector. We needed something that was going to sit in front of Direct Government Business Link and come October 17, redirect users to the correct places. And so we took a first approach by building a router in Scala. The router sort of came about from, we actually used it as our URL router for the beta, and we thought it made quite a good fit to be our redirector. However, it was proving quite hard going, and we thought there was a bit of potential in doing something else. So one sprint we thought we'd give a try with Nginx. Now, I'm sure most people here probably know what Nginx is, but for those who don't, it's a light, sort of lightweight HTTP server, and we already use it to proxy all of our apps on gov.uk. So it felt like it was there was some potential in giving it a try. So we threw about 100,000 URLs, a bit like this, into a config file. We sorted them a bit, and we tested it. And it turns out it tested pretty well. We had over 400 requests per second, and it seemed like quite a good idea. So we took a new redirector with Nginx at the heart. And we then sort of worked on this concept of mapping, a sort of one-to-one relationship between an old URL on Direct Gov Business Link or a department website to either the new piece of content on gov.uk or the fact it was no longer going to be provided. And to manage all these mappings, we needed a tool. So we built the Migratorator. And the Migratorator is a sort of app that our editors could go through. They could see all the mappings. We'd imported them from things like log files. We'd taken spreadsheets, and we'd taken a whole host of lists of friendly URLs and things like that, and threw them all into the Migratorator. And one by one, our editors went through and started actually assigning all these URLs. And this was really helpful because it meant that when we came to do the redirection, we could just dump everything out of here into what we were going to use our config files, and it basically just worked. So the quality of these mappings is really important to us. After all, if we are going to actually redirect users, we want to make sure we're redirecting them to the right place. So we built another tool. We built the Review-O-Matic. And I didn't come up with the names. And what the Review-O-Matic did was that we could basically, we invited everybody at GDS, and then we also invited editors from some government departments to basically step through each of our mappings to see the existing page and then what it would look like once the transition had been complete. And then you can say, does this look okay? Does this need a bit more work, or do we really need to look at this again? And we basically ran it for a couple of weeks. We had a leaderboard in the office with points, and we had people spending more time doing that than I think doing what other things they were doing at GDS. And we got some really good data about the sort of things which were working and the things which we had to revisit. And so that meant the next step for us to do was to actually put a redirector in place. And the first thing we did, we actually stuck in front of Direct Government Business Link as a proxy, but we also did a bit of a dark launch where you could visit a subdomain and actually see the real redirect happen. And that meant that come October 17th, when we released, all 83,000 URLs were redirected to the new location on day one, and we thought that was pretty good. And since then, we've also moved a lot of departmental content over, and we now redirect over 180,000 URLs, and we're going to keep those going for many years to come. Forever. And all the tools we've built are open source. They're on our GitHub. Take a look, fork them. You might find them useful. And I hope you find that interesting.
Jordan, Tom, thank you very much. Now.